This is Tripod, New Orleans at 300. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levenson. You know how you can walk into a mainstream clothing or household store like Urban Outfitters, H&M, Pier 1, and find indigenous designs printed across anything from a rug to a tank top? Well, this is the hyper-local origin story of how Native aesthetics entered into non-Native markets.
So I didn't even know that you had have some Chittimachas on exhibit now.
Oh yeah, I always do.
Good.
Dan Usner and Paul Trevor have known each other for a while. Dan's a history professor at Vanderbilt University. He grew up in New Orleans.
Just blocks away from here.
And Paul is curator of Native American and pre-Columbian art at the New Orleans Museum of Art, which is where we are right now.
So this is them. They were collected by a woman named Amelia White, and she was the first dealer of Native American art in New York City.
Paul brought Dan and I to see baskets made by the Chittimacha Nation that are part of NOMA's collection. The Chittimacha live on tribal lands in Charrington, Louisiana, about a two-hour drive from New Orleans and just 20 miles from Hot Sauce City, Avery Island. We'll get to why that matters later on. They've lived there for centuries and are among a few Louisiana tribes that weren't forced west when white settlers came to town.
Indian people around the country, they lost their language, they lost their religion. The one thing that they still have is the basket-making tradition. And I like to say in many Native American communities, babies are put in a basket and they're buried in a basket.
Let's talk about these Chittimacha baskets. They're beautiful and woven out of river cane that's made into narrow strips and dyed yellow, black, and red. Dan says the process is long and labor-intensive.
At first, the women would go out into these dense cane breaks where this natural river cane grew. They'd cut it and bring it back home, and then they would start to splice it.
With their teeth. Then they'd dye some of the strips in water boiled with either the hulls of black walnut or a root called swamp dock, which definitely wins for coolest name of a root.
And then start the weaving.
As Dan mentioned, Chittimacha women made the baskets. Another group of women took a liking to them. This phenomenon can be seen across the country in the late 19th century. Affluent white women took interest in indigenous crafts and thus saw themselves as saviors of an at-risk population and art. This type of patronage was commercialized through the Christian Women's Exchange.
Women's exchanges were widespread across the United States as places where crafts produced by rural women could be sold. Some of these stores included American Indian objects, and that was the case for the New Orleans store. On Lafayette Square in the late 19th, early 20th century.
This is where Avery Island and the family behind Tabasco comes in, the McElhaneys.
Even though the McElhaneys were located out here on Avery Island, 135 miles from New Orleans, they very much looked to New Orleans for much of their social life and business life and that sort of thing.
That's Shane Bernard, the McElhaney and Avery Island historian.
And the Christian Women's Exchange was set up to pair sort of well-to-do women with impoverished women. And, you know, today it sounds a bit maternalistic, and perhaps it was.
Which plays a part here. Sarah McElhaney and Mary Bradford, known as the McElhaney sisters, went gaga over these baskets. They saw these traditional Chittimacha crafts as works of art. And they said to the women weavers,
look, if you keep making this basketry like you've been doing for hundreds, if not thousands of years, we will market it for you to collectors all around the country, as well as to museums like the Peabody Museum at Harvard and the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C.
And so a business relationship formed between these Native and non-Native women, and a complex dynamic began. You're listening to Tripod, New Orleans at 300. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levenson.
Certainly, our history would be drastically different had there been no relationship with those ladies.
Kim Walden is a Chittimacha and the tribe's cultural director. Those ladies are the McElhaney sisters. At the turn of the 20th century, they turned the tribe into somewhat of a weaving factory. All of a sudden, the women weavers were being asked to produce on an unrealistic scale and schedule. Kim learned about this more nuanced relationship by reading letters between the McElhaney sisters and the tribe. A woman named Christine Paul was the weaver's main representative, since she was one of the few Chittimacha women who could read and write.
In one letter I read earlier, They wanted 100 mats, which are huge. They would be the size of like an area rug.
The McElhaney sisters ordered 100 of these to be produced in 1 week. Christine Paul wrote back that that was physically impossible.
Their knowledge of the process of making the baskets wasn't what it should have been, and they placed some pretty hard, almost demands on these ladies, and Christine had every able-bodied woman in the tribe and even children weaving.
This is where it gets tricky. The McElhaneys were definitely helping the Chitimachas turn a profit and got their artwork on the national map. But at what cost and for whose benefit? Dan Usner says it's important to also remember what drove these wealthy white women. On one hand, they're saying,
our ultimate goal, you know, is for the weavers to be able to sell directly. But on the other hand, these white women didn't want to give up that intermediary role.
To allow the Native women to work and sell autonomously was to lose control over the trade and give up that boss lady status. Kim Walden says that's why Sarah McElhaney held such a tight leash.
She didn't want them to sell baskets except through her. She had seen a basket in New Orleans and basically asked, you know, how is this basket in New Orleans without my knowing.
The women who were patronizing the artists often thought they're my Indians, my Chitimachas, and often in correspondence criticizing the women for not sort of living up to her expectations.
Which is just so interesting because it's like, well, we're the ones that make these, and you're telling us they're not good enough.
Right.
That's something they commonly wrote back. Don't you realize, you know, what we're doing for you? Because if it weren't for us, this craft would be dead.
Here is the ugly side to the relationship. The McElhaneys saw themselves as the saviors of this craft and these people. In response, Christine Paul had to walk on eggshells, assuming subservience.
Christine wrote some of the prices that she was getting for some of the baskets they felt were low. And then the next letter we have from her is, well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. Please excuse me if I say something that disappoints you. So still trying to maintain that relationship, but not let the weavers get taken advantage of. I just feel for Christine Paul.
Now, Kim says there's no doubt the McElhaneys helped the tribe, especially when their land was at risk of being taken away by the government. Shane Bernard has records of this in the Avery Island archives.
There are some really, you know, heart-wrenching letters written in broken English to the McElhaney sisters saying some local landowners are trying to run us off our ancestral land. The McElhaney sisters stepped in and hired an attorney for the tribe and also ended up buying the tribe's core 400 acres of ancestral land and deeding it to the federal government so that the federal government would finally recognize it as a reservation, which it did.
In 1916, the Chitimachas finally won the long struggle to maintain control of their ancestral land. It also shows how the Chitimacha women did hold power, since they're the reason the McElhaneys advocated for them in the first place.
That's the challenge, is to capture the full complexity of the relationship. It was definitely unequal, and yet it was mutually beneficial.
In 1916, the Chitimachas finally won the long struggle to maintain control of their land. This shows how the Chitimacha women did hold power, since they're the reason the McElhaneys advocated for them in the first place.
You can't say, quit your regular job and weave full time, because there's too many people that want them. You know what I'm saying? It's different. So as long as they weave in more of a hobby style, then the demand will always be greater.
In some ways, the basket has returned to its original role for the tribe, something they make on their own terms. Tripod is a production of WWNO New Orleans Public Radio in collaboration with the Historic New Orleans Collection and the University of New Orleans Midlow Center for New Orleans Studies. Special thanks to Evan Christopher for the opening theme music. Catch Tripod on the air Thursdays at 8:30 a.m. and Monday afternoons on All Things Considered. To hear this episode of Tripod again, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or go to WWNO.org, where you can find photos of Christine Paul weaving a Chitimacha basket. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levinson, and I'll tripod you later. Hello.